long as the reference is in there, do we care whether it's a parent or a...
It's up to you.
I mean...
The parent is better to me, but I mean, it's just a matter... I mean, the Rod Visor controls doesn't...
But see, people wiser than we, Mary, have determined that under is better than parent.
I understand that, but that doesn't mean I have to agree with it.
Does anybody have...
Also, part of it is consistency in our code so that people know what to expect and they can say, oh yeah, this is the way it is, so I know how to read this other thing.
That would be a shame. I'd hope to make that argument in Superior Court.
And some of them would make any sense either. You've got to leave the parentheses.
Well, yeah. Terry, that's a good point.
It wouldn't make any sense if you said under for a lot of them.
Oh, I know. For a lot of them, yeah. It won't.
So they want to do that. I mean, that's not going to go through with a global search and replace and take out all of our parentheses and put in under, are they?
No. Each one would be carefully crafted.
Okay, well, Harold, who could ask for more than that?
Assuming careful craftsmanship, I don't...
Does anybody object to the proposal to replace parents with unders where applicable? Hearing none.
Okay, thank you.
Using good judgment.
Right, that, I think
is there anything further on the that we need to do as far as your material is concerned, your direction?
Not right now.
Now it's what, section 175? Is that what we're doing?
Well, we're starting now with Dan's
presentation
of the ANCC. We've completed...
Right, and his first thing is 175, right?
Well, yeah, because 310, you can see, you just told me to make it very explicit. 310 makes that very explicit, so that's taken care of. Now, under unfinished business, this is a matter particularly we need the input of Will and Dick on. There was no provision of the exposure draft in the 13th legislature that drew more heated concern and protest than section 175. And what had originally happened was, I mean, and the idea behind section 175 is disarmingly simple, and that is that nonprofit corporations should not be allowed to accumulate assets that they have no plans to dispose of. I mean, those are the assets that get stolen. Right? And so we said that if your assets were 50% greater than your expenditures in the preceding fiscal year for all of the purposes that you had, that unless those assets could be related to purposes stated in your articles of incorporation, they were considered to be surplus current assets. Now, this prohibition was only on cash and things that could be readily reduced to cash. There was nothing about land, fixtures attached to the land, etc. So it was just current assets. When people said that was a terrible idea, the most cogent line of criticism was, it might be a good idea for public benefit nonprofits, but mutual benefit nonprofits should be allowed to define their purposes not only in their articles, but by resolutions of their boards of directors. And they should not have to amend their articles in order to accomplish a statement of purpose. In its waning consideration of the ANCC, the Commission drafted what is now Section 175 of this draft bill, which gave way on that very important point, conceded it. And so now you'll notice that if you look at Section 175, the easiest way to have this discussion, I think, is to look at Section 175, which is found on page 16. The Commission's big change, which hopefully has taken much of the opposition and accommodated it by saying, you have a point, and we're now persuaded that your point is better than the one that we had, is that in the definition of current liabilities, public benefit corporations have current liabilities, recurrent and anticipated expenses in furtherance of the purpose or purposes stated in the corporate articles. Now, those can always be amended. In the case of mutual benefit corporations, those recurrent and anticipated expenses in furtherance of the purpose or purposes stated in the corporate articles or by board resolution. So that major concession to the critics of 175 has been accommodated by this draft. And the question before that was discussed in August at the meeting where a quorum was not present is whether or not you think you want the ANCC to go forward with this amended version of 175 in it, knowing, or at least it would be my prediction, and Judge Stewart and Chairman Abbott sat through and answered questions and were hectored in the public hearing for the original version of 175, that there are going to be people who will see this as the part of the code that they really don't like. And some of the critics who read it and look at the new comment that says that it's changed will say, yes, we made a reasonable objection. It was met with a reasonable accommodation. Others won't go through that exercise, and they're just going to look and see, is there a Section 175 in this code? And they're going to oppose it. And so it's just it's a question that is in two parts. One, as a policy matter, does the commission wish to have 175? And B, I would just ask you to also think about the political implications of its retention. Because 175 could be removed from this code, as I told the members of the commission who were present at the August meeting, and it is not a hit below the waterline. The rest of the code functions perfectly well without it.
So just speaking to 175, I don't have a great deal of difficulty with the philosophy underlying 175, which is that you should be able to, with some ease, determine what the purpose of your corporation is, particularly when your articles are very broad and don't set out specific things. So I don't have a problem with identifying a use for these funds, which takes them out of the excess reserve capital category by means of a board resolution. However, as drafted here, I can think of at least one situation where there might be a problem, and that is that the timing of the adoption of the resolution could be after you know that you're going to have a problem with accumulated reserve funds and you want to cover it. And I think that defeats the purpose of limiting it to stated purposes. If you can always go in after the fact and fabricate some purpose to justify the accumulation of excess funds. So if we adopt this, I would recommend that we consider changing the language to indicate that a resolution which is adopted prior to that point in time when the excess reserve funds have accumulated.
Well, that's a colloquy you had with some anonymous citizen who was, mm-hmm. In 1983. And there were accountants out in that audience, and you recall, they said that wouldn't work. I mean, you just, you're accumulating funds all during the course of the year. And so what you're saying is that there's a bright line event, which is at the end of the accounting year, and that can be the only bright line event, and that, yes, a board resolution could, after the fact, come up with a corporate purpose to expend those funds. See, I have less of a problem with there being a corporate purpose identified than that the funds just sort of sit there with nobody expecting them to be spent on anything. It's when the funds just sit there quietly with no one thinking they're going to be expended on any purpose that they can easily be diverted. That, to me, is the biggest danger. So I think we'd have a pragmatic problem, although my sympathies lie with your view. In fact, they were originally more extreme. I didn't favor the compromise at all, but I think that upon reflection, I was wrong. I was over concerned. If a board resolution comes along and comes up with a corporate purpose, then members of the mutual benefit nonprofit know that there's supposed to be a targeted corporate objective out there, and they should be able to figure out that, gee, it isn't being accomplished. Why not? And that is the type of internal regulation and mechanism that we're relying upon for mutual benefits. So,
how long after the funds have become excess must the resolution be passed?
Well, to put it real bluntly, before they're stolen. because if they're still around, and we have to now, I mean, let's suppose we've had a very good year, and we find that we have in excess of what we'd anticipated as within the corporate prerogative, we're being told that we've got $105,000. We now debate a board resolution and adopt it as the board of this mutual benefit nonprofit to spend the $105,000 in the following manner. That money is now, as far as I'm concerned, got a protective mechanism looking after it. If the money's already gone, we'll never know. I mean, it'll never be showing up as surplus current assets.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
The specific problem I'm addressing is that the accountant comes in and says, you're now in excess. And you say, okay, we probably should do something about that. And 10 years later, when somebody complains or file a lawsuit or after the funds have been stolen and you're trying to place blame on somebody, they say, well, we did pass a board resolution. And then I'm representing those folks and I say, there's nothing in the statute that requires you to do it immediately upon being notified that you're in excess.
Well, I think that it's very true, and we would never want to sell to the legislature the idea that 175 is a cure-all for the problem that happened, say, to the Girl Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is just, it's one protective mechanism, but it is only one, and it doesn't take care of everything. So if the funds have been stolen, the fact that somebody later on can come along and say, well, my defense is that there was a belated board resolution, does that individual no good? Because you've already found that Fessler stole the money. The funds weren't spent in support of that board resolution. So all this is a warning mechanism. I mean,
wouldn't it be just as easy to put language in here, just a fairly simple change that says that upon learning, you know, maybe you have some inquiries upon learning that you're in excess, you have to take board action.
I think that would be a perfectly appropriate and
providential
change.
Which is not going so far as to say that you have to have adopted a resolution before excess was accumulated.
That could even be put in the comments, John.
Yeah, at least when you know, so that if a judge is presented with a question like this, he doesn't have to either determine what a reasonable amount of time for compliance with the statute is. He can look at the thing and say, well, when did you find out that you were in excess? You know, and did you pass a resolution then? And if you didn't, then you're not in compliance with 175.
Right.
So that would be my recommendation.
I agree with that.
Which, you know, I think is a reasonable, you know, that accommodates the accountant's problem of at least his claim that he doesn't know during the course of the year how much money they've accumulated. I have serious questions about that. But at least, you know, this allows him to wait till the end of the year, and then once you know what the books say at the end of the year, then you should do something. You should identify. Because that certainly keeps with the spirit of this provision, which is, if you want to accumulate, then you've got to identify.
Well, I very cheerfully will rewrite the comment to make that very clear. I mean, so that it reads like a recipe for the solution to this problem. But again, only because I don't want you to have gone to all this trouble of drafting these two bills. And you really need legislative reform in these two areas. I mean, you just desperately do. To have the thing strung out. I mean, I still feel a great deal of personal responsibility. You would have had your profit-seeking corporations code years before you got it, had we not had the provision in there, Section 48, on secondary liability for officers and directors.
Well, that's all
and it
true
was
the fact that you were a professor from Berkeley, but what could we do about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good idea. The statute would have been better, in my judgment, had it been in there. But I don't want you, I mean, you all have the capacity, I don't, to know whether or not you think that there's enough political recognition of the need for reform that these two codes will be enacted by the legislature. And getting rid of 175 in toto, in my judgment, gives you a statute that is not as good as it could be, but the art of politics is that of possible. And if you think that getting a statute that's 95% of what you want is doable without 175, and putting 175 in, you're going to be down there, and particularly John and the judge, because John went down and spent all kinds of time on his own nickel lobbying the ACC, and the judge became in addition to all of his judicial, you two are the ones that this falls most heavily on in terms of explaining.
Well, I'm perfectly happy with leaving it in with the change mm-hmm. that John suggested, taking the risk of objection and meeting that objection.
I think we can. Yeah. I think we have a pretty good response in defense of 175.
Well, then we're going to have, well, the commission itself is going to be hearing about this also, right, before a legislative committee. So, you know, let's see what happens. I mean, we could renumber it.
Is there anybody that wants to remove Section
175? I think that's the best idea.
It becomes 77.
Right. There is no 175.
Is there anybody that wants to remove 175?
Do you understand?
Is there anybody that objects to amending 175 to point out that upon discovery of the excess funds that a corporate purpose has to be determined by resolution?
That's to be in the comments, right?
Yes, that's in the
perhaps
comments.
Discovery is not quite the right word. Upon information, or whatever the right phrase is.
Okay, I will take care of that.
Okay.
Well, that is
175.
We're back now to the agenda.
Comments on
it. Yes.
Not in the fact.
That's correct.
Comments.
All right. Then we're down now to changes ordered at the meeting.
Okay.
Page seven, and it's going to go real fast until we turn to page eight. This is, for me, the hardest thing, because I don't purport to be an expert on ANCSCA, but the point was made at the last meeting, there is no provision in the ANCC as originally introduced in the legislature or as now redrafted with all this commission effort coordinating with ANCSCA. Put one in. All right. In order to do it, the first thing I did was ask Joe to go through and read ANCSCA, and he wrote a memo, which is in this working paper, and it's open my eyes. I discussed it with John this morning at breakfast. Our understanding, and I think that Joe's reading of the thing is unassailably correct, is that regional corporations are unable, by virtue of the positive provisions of ANCSCA, which says that they must incorporate as profit-seeking corporations under Alaska law. Regional corporations cannot be nonprofit corporations, but John points out that in practice, they have assumed that there's nothing to forbid them from having nonprofit corporation subsidiaries.
Exactly.
Though the 13 regional corporations must themselves be of a profit-seeking nature. It is quite clear that village corporations are given statutory permission to organize either as profit or nonprofit-seeking entities under Alaska law. So it's therefore very clear that there has to be a Section 960 that is a coordination. And so our Section 960, along with the, is at page 8 now. And this is technical stuff, but first of all, we do not, let me see how I can best explain this. This was a headache last Sunday doing this damn thing. We don't use the terms stock in our statute. And we don't use the term shareholders in our statute. But the Federal Act does, even though it says that village corporations may organize as nonprofit corporations, it continues to use the inartful language that is appropriate for profit-seeking corporations only. And so, Joe, I'm having difficulty because I'm looking for the thing where we say that...
It might be in the ANCC.
No, it's right in front of me. I'm looking for the thing that says, references to shareholders means members, references to stock means stockholders means membership.
Page 8, yes, in A.
It's on page 7 right at the beginning.
There it is. I'm sorry. Okay. You can get rid of much of that uncertainty when you try and read the two statutes side by side by putting in 960A. That's where we found it. That all references to shares and shareholders in the Act, meaning ANSCA, shall be interpreted to mean members and memberships under this chapter. That more than anything else cuts the Gordian knot of allowing you to read the two statutes together.
Do we need to make a change in reference to Philip Chase Regional Corporation?
No. I don't think so.
Because you can just, the regional just can incorporate a new corporation and a nonprofit. I mean, it doesn't apply. That new nonprofit isn't an ANCSA.
It's not a regional corporation.
It's not a regional corporation.
And it's not a village corporation.
No.
So it's not an ANCSA corporation.
No, so it's not an ANCSA corporation.
So there doesn't need to be anything referencing them.
No.
In the
You don't need any references to regional corporations in here, viz. The nonprofit.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's nothing in ACC or ANCC or ANCSA that prohibits a subsidiary nonprofit corporation from being created.
And it doesn't force it into a
category of being a village or any or you know any other type of corporation. So the only thing we have to refer to is village corporations that elect to be treated as a nonprofit corporation, and then make reference to the fact that in ANCSA it refers to certain things that will not be found under Alaska's new 21.
Just I think it's a typo.
Please.
960A.
960A.
A village corporation organized under 43 U.S.C. section 1-629E as amended.
Yes, and it should be also capital N on medium.
Are there village corporations now incorporated as nonprofits?
I do not know the answer to this. I know that reading ANSCA there can be.
What was the question, Mary?
Are there village corporations presently incorporated as nonprofits?
I believe there are. But not very many, according to Eric Leroy.
I was going to say, it would be nice to have Eric.
Yeah. According to Eric, he said there, if any, they were very, very few. That a lot of them had started out as nonprofit corporations and sought for-profit status.
All right.
For a variety of reasons.
Well, I hope we're clearing up some of their problems, because until you do what we're trying to do here, which is to equate shares with members and shareholders with memberships, you'd have a hell of a time giving legal advice as to how it could be done. For instance, look at B. B talks about the circumstances in which these corporations have to make what are essentially, without consideration, transfers of property. Right? And so this language now is taken directly out of ANSCA. And we have to give way to that. And so we did it in the ACC, and we're doing it here. Because otherwise, of course, these things would be bonus to shares and quite illegal. But
on B2, Dan?
Yeah.
Unless otherwise provided in the article.
That's what...
Is that what ANCSA said?
Yeah. Now, C talks about payments that would be otherwise forbidden under Alaska law as distributions. And so under the ACC, the provision 960 handled it by saying that they would not be regarded as distributions. And that's what we're doing here as well. So that if ANSCA requires that there be a distribution, it is not a distribution within the meaning of the physical of the constraints that we have on distribution to members. D deals with organic changes and parallels almost verbatim the language of the ACC, with the exception of the sale of assets, which we don't permit.
Yeah, we have a reference in here to December 19 of 1991.
I was going to ask you about that. That's in the ACC as well.
But that the ACC was adopted before that night. The latest changes right. to ANCSA were made.
But the December 1991 language appears to be, as far as we're able to find, the still in ANCSA.
Okay. I don't know. I thought they changed that to, because that was going to be a real problem that they were coming up on and weren't going to be able to get their act together. They did not want stock to be alienable after December 19 of 1991.
Right.
So it seems to me that...
And we're now making memberships not alienable.
Well, it, somebody might argue that we are trying to do that.
Right. But isn't that what we should be trying to do?
Well, as I understand the changes made to ANCSA, they're continuing the non-alienation provisions past 1991.
So the ACC should also be amended to drop the reference to this date?
We might.
I believe so.
Yeah.
What section?
960.
What,
it's 960 in the ACC as well.
I mean, but where far?
It's going to be right down here. Just turn the page right there.
See, that I didn't notice.
So that you're telling me that the date 1991 should not be in the ANCC.
Well, I'm raising that issue. You're telling me that you couldn't find anything in there that changed that date.
And I thought there was.
And I thought there was, but I haven't read it, so I can't.
I thought there was too.
Last year, in 89.
Yeah.
Right. It isn't going to be in there. What they're asking about is going to be here in the federal law. Were there... Well, I'm not going to take your time looking for it now.
Yeah, the annotations may not... Are they 90 annotations?
They are.
This is the most updated we have for 960.
No. What they want to know is... The reason 960
has... The most recent
has
amendment to ANCSA... do away with the 1991 target date.
Okay.
To the
in some
extent,
respects it definitely did.
Pardon?
Excuse me.
Yeah. To the extent that it allowed, it continued the non-alienation of shares provisions of the 1971 Act. In 1971, a provision was in the Act that says you cannot alienate your shares as a shareholder in a native corporation until 1991. And since we were up on that date, there was a movement to continue that non-alienation.
Doyon shares.
Because the corporation were concerned that the state would lose control of the corporation.
It's 1629C. Oh, God. It's very long. Duration of alienability restrictions. Alienability restrictions shall continue until terminated in accordance with the procedures established in this section. No such termination shall take effect until after December 18, 1991.
Okay, but that's true. They still have that date, but after that date, as I understand it, they say that the membership would have to do
certain
things.
Since you're much more knowledgeable about this.
Okay. Well, I'm not knowledgeable.
Well,
I just have a little bit.
Would you look at it and see? It starts right there. And because we may have to amend the ACC then, too.
What about, again, what about the 12 regions? I mean, don't we have 13?
Yes.
Well, within the same, the third line of...
Well, no, there are 12 regions in Alaska. There's a 13th extraterritorial regional corporation.
Right. Okay.
And Alaska codes would only apply to the Alaska corporation, is that what you're saying?
Well, all we did was take it out of this act. So, I mean, I didn't purport to fiddle with that. But it may be wrong in both acts.
Well, the 12 regions of Alaska, I can see there are 12 regions in Alaska, but...
But they're not 12 regions of Alaska necessarily.
Yeah.
There are 13 regions
of Alaska.
So it should be changed in here, too.
Well, I don't consider we have any obligation to do anything with that 960. That was drafted by counsel for the native corporations and lobbied by them. I mean, they said this is what we want, and they submitted that to the legislative process, and it was taken into consideration. Now, if we do any tinkering with it, then we have an obligation to make sure that it's different, but if we just use their same language.
Well, see, I mean, the language 12 regions of Alaska is taken right out of the ACs. Also, the date December 19, 1991 came right out of the ACC. So,
maybe what we should do in this for this one is talk to Eric.
I think what we have to do is just leave it in and wait until they come out
and
of the
see,
woodwork.
Yeah,
the last
exactly. That's
because we tried to get a consensus
this
stuff. And in fact, the 960 was done at the very last second, like within 3 days before adjournment. So I don't think anybody's going to do anything until passage is imminent.
Okay, so
if they don't like it, I think they can complain. I mean, we can certainly bring it to everybody's attention.
Well, it'd be real easy to, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, send a letter out to the regional corporations and say, folks, there's correlative language in 960 in ANCC. Please review it for correctness.
Okay.
Put the burden on them because they may like 12 of Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they want that.
Yeah, of Alaska or 12 in Alaska.
Well, then, I mean, there's no great point in torturing you with details of this thing because, I mean, the value judgments are certainly not mine. There's nothing innovative we've sought to do here other than...
Okay.
Do you find...
Yeah, I'll tell you how it works. I don't know how it fits in here, but the alienability is to be determined by a vote of the shareholders. And if the question is placed before the shareholders by the board of directors, then those votes can take place only every 5 years. So that if on the other hand, the shareholders want to raise the issue and petition the board, the question can be voted on, and the question and alienability permitted. If a favorable vote is, there is a favorable vote every 2 years. If shareholders want to start selling their stock, they can petition the board. It's voted on, it goes down. But they can come back 2 years later again and ask again. On the other hand, if it's the board placing the question before the shareholders, they can only do that every 5 years.
Wouldn't it be the easiest thing to just cross-reference to the Federal Act amendment?
I think it would.
And just say, you know, pursuant to the terms or under the terms of, and then put the federal reference in there.
Well, but specifically, we're talking about dissenters' rights.
This is dissent.
We're talking about dissenters' rights, and we're talking about merger and consolidation, which is a form of alienation.
Yeah. All right.
So all we want to say is, whatever you do in this Section D has to be done in accordance with and inside the section in out of the USCA or USC.
All right, so it should say, notwithstanding reference to our statute, the plan of merger, consolidation, or exchange approved under this section.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, we could say, and in accordance with, and then put the federal reference in.
We could say something to the effect of we normally grant dissenters' rights.
Right.
Okay. There's another section that I didn't read, which is on dissenters' rights.
Okay.
I don't know.
We don't have to figure out what they said in the Federal Act. We just have to say that this section is controlled by that act.
All right. So we could say, may not include a right of members to dissent if prohibited by 43 U.S. By the Act.
By the Act.
So we can fix it right now. Exchange approved under this plan of merger, consolidation, or exchange approved under this section. So we now get rid of the approved under this section before. Mm-hmm. May not include a right of members to dissent if prohibited
by the Act. Is everybody happy with that cosmetic change? That takes us off the hook in interpreting the latest ANCSA amendment.
Then the only other thing I would ask you to do, please, is briefly glance, if you've not already done so out of just sheer fatigue, at the letter of transmittal on the ANCC and see if it... and then I'm going to make some notes for myself while you're doing that. Look at... desired effect.
I read this real fast, Anna, but do we have a reference in here to our treatment under 175? In other words, what we've done is an accommodation.
No.
Do we want to put something in there 175 since that was a real hot topic, or just raise that in another context?
Well, it's for the pleasure of the body. I deliberately put no... I mean, the original letter of transmittal didn't call attention to 175. I figured I wasn't going to call it.
Okay.
I did put a paragraph in that is quite new, which is at page 15 on 310. Because it seems that a lot of people haven't appreciated that that was ever in the statute. And
maybe it's just better to
see
not,
a typo too.
You know, highlight it to indicate that we think it's a problem.
Yeah.
We think it's a solution, and we don't make it a problem.
Discussed the question of how we're going to handle the comments in the ARCC, so my reasons for taking your time are concluded.
I don't have any problem with the letter.
Is everybody happy with the letter of transmittal?
Mm-hmm.
As is.
I'd ask for a motion then on adoption of the ANCC pursuant to discussion.
I'll state the most quickly. I move we adopt the draft of the proposed Alaska Nonprofit Corporations Code as printed as the agenda for the October 1990 meeting of the Code Division Commission. And with the minor changes that we've already discussed.
Any discussion on that? Any objection? So adopted. Anything further from the commissioners or from Dan or Joe?
Nothing further.
There it is.
Before
I ask Mr. McKee if he wants to make some comments for the record.
When we discussed the religious one, did we fix a date for
review when these things have been final form?
No, you haven't yet at all, Judge.
Do we need to consider that?
Yes. And the question is, you know, I think you need to do two things. Set a date certain for us to have our work done, and B, whether you wish to have any further conversation. It probably is not necessary. It's going to be hard on Joe to be making trips back here now as we segue further into the semester. I can come for a day if necessary.
I think it would be desirable if we can fix a date that's mutually convenient.
Let's do it pronto. I mean, I can do this work fast. I have no desire to get anything other than to give you the maximum shot at getting
this. But it also involves work by Terry's office.
Yes, it does.
So,
particularly the comments.
Mid-November?
Well, we're talking about getting the comments retyped, the commentary.
And then that's going to be in Terry's office and substantively revised. That's my responsibility.
Right.
Okay? I also have to get a generated set of mini comments for the ARCC, which I can do right away. The changes that you've ordered be made today, I can make within the next 10 days. So you can set, look at your schedules and set a meeting in mid-November, and I'll attend it.
Is that an appropriate time?
Excuse me, I lied. You're not retyping the comments. I am. I'm supposed to find a cottage industry source to do it.
She's just doing them.
Yeah.
But
No, excuse me. Thank you very much.
What does your schedule say about when you can be ready for us to...
The week of November the 12th.
Let me just check.
I don't have any problem with the Saturday meeting. I've got a chance to get it people.
It's a lot better for me, too, because it gives me the opportunity to serve out the week at the university and then simply take that 4 o'clock flight out of California and arrive here at 9:45 on...
November 17th?
That would be okay.
What day of the week is
that?
That's
Saturday.
Okay, yeah, that'll be okay.
Yeah.
And we might be able even to get Fran and
well, I ran out of excuses for Saturdays. The week before I'd have one, but for that Saturday,
this,
I'm sure
this would be consideration for the completed bills.
Yeah.
And then we'd want to have public hearing at that time.
On that date?
We've made all of the decisions. We've adopted the bills, and we're just now talking about memorializing them.
Well, you can certainly do that, but there wouldn't be time to distribute it because we'll be working. See, I won't be in the office in November. I mean, October. So, when
think,
I get
I don't
back...
I think it's ready, John. I think we have to do a public hearing after that, after we've seen it.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of when we can get this into the legislative process.
Well, you can't submit it until the, I doubt if you can pre-file it, but I could check on that, but it won't actually be submitted until like the 21st of January.
Okay.
So, but also what we could do is if we didn't want to have this meeting, the November meeting, and another public hearing meeting, we could have it distributed to the commissioners when you are finished, and then set up for the next meeting being a public meeting.
I think we have to consider a December meeting.
Well, the first part of December makes more sense.
Consider a December
meeting.
In
addition to the November meeting?
I would feel more comfortable that way. I'd like to see this.
Before you stick your necks out,
yeah.
I think.
Well, I think there are little things that keep popping up as you formulate this. I have to look at certain things. It might be a good idea.
Well, why don't we just do a November 17th meeting? Go over any last minute details on the ARCC and the ANCC.
I feel more comfortable.
And then set a time for a public hearing after that, and we'll still have time to get into the legislative process.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
The only, as far as December is concerned, I'm going to be in Taiwan from the 8th of December, and then in Canton. I won't be getting back until the 18th of December, so. There's a 10-day period in the fore part of December when I'm not available.
And I'm going to be in trial up until probably the 12th of December or sometime around that date.
Well, so December's the tough.
Is it possible to have a public hearing? Is it too close on the Thursday the 20th, for example? Or is that
of November
no.
or December.
December.
Here.
And this question, do we want that here or do we want that in Juneau?
We're going to be in, the legislature is going to be, well, it depends on what we do. When's the legislature start this time?
21st of January.
21st.
Oh, they don't start until
then? Yeah. I'd say then we should have it in Anchorage sometime on the 21st.
Well, then we can fix that date on the 17th of November.
Now, when you have this hearing, is that going to mean you want to have a hearing before you submit it to the legislature?
Correct.
Is that it? Okay.
Because
so then
we may want to make some changes in it before we submit the request.
As a result of the hearing, very likely.
Depending on what
now,
public input we
yeah,
get, we may want
changes in, like we're doing now, would be fine. If you, the major renovation of it probably might not work at that time of the year.
Right.
Would delay the introduction, but so be
but
this
just
is
the
first
ordinary
session of that legislature.
Take out a section or coordinate some sections.
Yeah, we have to have a public, I mean, it's okay, that's okay.
Yeah, we've got to have a public hearing, and
okay.
if that results in some major changes, then we just don't get it in.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine.
All right. So all we need to worry about now, basically, is this 17th to look at the final draft.
17th, and we
there
have
may
that.
Be some other business not related to these items that we want to take on.
Now, do we want to do that in Juneau or Anchorage?
Anchorage.
Anchorage.
In November?
The November 17th.
Anchorage.
Okay. But I wanted to see a schedule for us to complete this work that's amenable to you and to Terry.
No, the 17th of November is perfectly amenable to me.
On the ANCC or the ARCC before I give Mr. McKee an opportunity to comment.
No, I think that's the next order of business.
The floor is yours, Mr. McKee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Charles McKee, and I've been here since 1966, and I might add that I really didn't realize that ANSCA was being discussed in this, but then again, it brings to mind it is a non-profit entity. My knowledge goes, I was directly involved in, my father was, anyway, he married a native, and I was kept abreast as to the difficulties there. Came about from this ANSCA situation and individual natives applying for land, and they weren't allowed individually to have subsistence rights, I mean subsurface rights, excuse me. And so that became a big issue, and my father fought long and hard, diligent battle with the BLM, excuse me, which is non-profit, BLM and BIA, both of them being non-profit, and he opposed them to the point where he had to go to their superiors and bring about a compromise. And he is now passed away, but the resulting situation with the land is my stepmother chose to sell some of the land after she received title to it, and it was surveyed by the BLM, and then the BLM went in and resurveyed it. The land was, she sold a chunk, was 40 acres, and then he went in and resurveyed it, and the land that she sold mushroomed up to 60 acres, and I was quite appalled at the fact that they went ahead and sold it, and then renegotiated the acreage without any additional monies because BLM or BIA was out of the picture at this point in time, and it's I objected. I didn't know who to bring this objection to. I tried to discuss this with my stepmother at the time, but they had her in a position where they wanted her because she was addicted to alcohol, to the point where I last winter took her to the hospital because she almost died from alcoholic poisoning. And that's a pretty extreme situation, but yet she had no comprehension as to what was taking place and could care less. All she wanted to do was, you know, sit back and go to the bank and wallow in her self-pity. And so me being a stepson had no valid jurisdiction from any other people's point of view, although the fact that I do have a genuine concern for her well-being, which is what my father asked me to do at his deathbed, aside from making sure the land didn't leave the possession, and which is a situation that's now occurring, is he's gradually selling her resources out of need because she had been swindled her monies that she had from my dad's life policy and so on, and was forced eventually to sell parcels out this land. Which brings in the other issue involving a non-profit organization here that's actually a high-grading front or high-grading mineral in that particular area. We're talking about Kootenai Lake, Copper Center. And it's SBCA of all groups. There, it's a covert operation to high-grade mineral mineralization in this particular area because there's an extreme amount of ore body up there that I stumbled upon, but they had apparently already knew about because of inside information because of the people working within the BIA and BLM and their surveying and mineralogy program. My father didn't realize that when he went up there to file on this native land law, but actually what he was stumbling into was a very heavily mineralized area. He just wanted to build a lodge and go fishing and live out the rest of his life in tranquility. Little did he know that he was stumbling into something that people were willing to murder for him or extort.
How does this relate to our bills on the nonprofit code and the religious corporation code?
Well, herein, how it relates is the fact that you were worried about, they're talking about the 1991 deadline and extending it, and the Native corporations are concerned about losing their sovereignty.
Okay, do you understand that nothing that we do in these two bills will have any effect on ANCSA or the federal law? The state legislature can't do anything that's going to change federal law.
Yeah.
So all we're doing is trying to draft these bills so that they don't conflict with federal law, which takes precedence. So we're not doing anything as far as ANCSA is concerned. Our only concern about 1991 is that we don't put something in here that is contrary to what's in federal law.
And that although the government itself, the federal government, is a non-profit entity that functions within the boundaries or territory of the state. And so therefore they have to be also scrutinized as their conduct, their individuals within these agencies and their conduct.
But the government is not a non-profit corporation under this statute or any statute that we deal with.
I know, but it has bearing as to what impacts for instance, the other non-profit entities that function within the state. What I made reference to SBCA and the people that are within that organization. I happened to meet a few of them up there in that area at the time. when I went back in there several times. My issue is, the reason why I came here today is I've been subjected to a great deal of abuse and harassment, and I'm trying to determine whether the insurance industry that functions in the state, is it considered non-profit?
Insurance industry?
Yeah.
Is it?
Certainly it's not.
It's a profit.
Very much a very good profit. Enterprise.
Well, that is a subject of debate of this last week as to well, whether they're a profit organization or not, because the state was seeking to impose more regulations and have some of
these, Mr. McKee, these bills wouldn't touch on that anyway, because the insurance industry in Alaska is regulated in an entirely different statute.
Well, I understand that. I've got some of the regulations there, you know, and talked about. You see, the reason why I come here about the nonprofit agencies and the religious corporations is I, because of the conduct of the insurance industry, it set me at odds with these nonprofit agencies, and I might add the state of Alaska is a nonprofit agency.
No, Mr. McKee, the state of Alaska is not a nonprofit agency. It's a governmental entity. And there's nothing in here that will, this guides private conduct, whether it be of a, you know, a religious corporation or a nonprofit corporation. It has nothing to do with the way the state of Alaska operates.
Well, then, they sent me a...
We're not a policing agency, so if they've broken the law, we're just trying to set up set of laws under which, if you're an organization that wants to incorporate, this is how you would do it. And if a group that does incorporate under the laws, they break the laws, you would have to go to, I guess,
the
Attorney General
or the Consumer Protection Agency or the Attorney General's office.
But we don't, we're not policing those organizations here today.
Which they well, I understand that now, but I the way that the state functions, it's a governmental agency, but they look upon themselves as a non-profit entity.
Well, it's true that they're not organized for the purpose of making profit. They are non-profit in a generic sense, but they're not organized as non-profit corporations. So they're not touched by this act.
And so, okay, then...
See, there's nothing in these acts that tells the state what to do or what not to do. The legislature can do that in other statutes, but in these statutes, we're not attempting to tell the state what to do.
We're telling private people who want to form a corporation how they go about doing it. Private person.
Then my comment is strictly with the nonprofits and the profit corporations, but the reason why I've had difficulty and having difficulty with a few of these is because of the conduct of a profit-making entity, a large one, and a governmental agency, two of them, federal and state. And so it put me into conflict with my religious fellowship, because I was subjected to the hardship and harassment of a profit-making entity, and then the governmental agencies I mentioned, state and federal. And so I, because of the situation, it placed me into medical life-threatening situation and put me into financial arrears with living conditions. I was subjected to putting my stuff nearby this fellowship.
Okay, there's nothing that's in here that can address that issue, Mr. McKee.
Mm-hmm. Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
I think all we can offer you here is our sympathy and understanding that there's nothing that we're doing that can relate to your concerns. We just have no power to address those.
Other than the fact that I I would like to see that the books would be open to, in reference to the religious and non-profit entities, that the books should be allowed to be opened for public inspection without going through all the hoops of the legalese and so on, and that would make things much more easier to address the situation.
Well, we've tried to accommodate the interests of the corporation to not be harassed and the interests of the people to know what's going on. We think we've barely done that in these bills.
But I've been harassed by these agencies.
But those agencies are not non-profit corporations that are regulated.
I've been harassed. These agencies use these non-profits as harassment tools when they impose their covert dictates to them, and then the individuals get harassed through these agencies.
Well, that's why we've tried to strike a balance in these bills.
And make sure that the people that want access to this information of the nonprofits, religious, and corporations are not agents, covert or openly, agents or brokers of any governmental agency, federal or state, or a private investigator. You have to be purely an individual citizen.
Well, that's really beyond the scope of the statutes that we draft. That's a function to be performed by the corporation and the shareholders and the members and whatever.
Well, I'm saying as far as allowing the books to be disclosed to these people that are inquiring into whether the nonprofit religious organization or the nonprofit organization, these individuals looking into it should be citizens and not also, i.e., agents or brokers or private investigators.
Any other comments that you want to address to either the nonprofit or the religious corporation code?
No, that'll end it.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your comments. We have still on the agenda the status report. I don't have a budget bill, so I can't give you a status report on the budget. On the contractual services, we have a signed contract now with Dan Fessler. Is there any old business to come before the commission at this time?
Well, what? If I look at the minutes, I might know it better, but what our posture with respect to
occupational license?
Right.
Occupation.
We're waiting for...
Yeah, we decided to just wait on occupational licensing in the fond hope that Randall Burns would indeed get funding for a person who would indeed review our bill and who would indeed work with us to come up with something.
The reason for my comment is it right for us to send him a letter saying that we're going to have a meeting on the 17th of November and he present something at that time?
I would say it would be right every 10 minutes from now until he complied.
Yeah, I think we should do that. We should specifically notify him now of the November 17th meeting, in this case, we'd like to have this report by that time if he can.
Get the urge. Do we want to put our license on the agenda?
I would think so.
Okay.
Our agenda would not be very long otherwise. And, by any chance we could have had a chance to hear from him.
It's half my clients are just like that.
Are we?
Mary, as the standing committee on Burns, would you write him a letter and in your sweet, kind way?
Prayerfully hopeful.
Anything he gets on our letterhead, he disregards. But I'll write him. Okay.
Well, you come closer than any of the rest of us, individually or collectively, in getting Randall to do something. So.
Well, at least he feels guilty. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Hopefully, he feels guilty. Okay.
And any of our other subject matter concerns?
Well, we still
for any treatment at that time.
Yeah, we still have a security interest bill, which we can ask to be introduced at the next legislative session without any major amendments. It will probably take some upgrading to see if there's any changes. But I don't think there are any substantive changes that have occurred either legislatively or in words of wisdom from the Alaska Supreme Court. So.
Well, then we do ask Terry if she can report on this, on that, as to the necessity for any updating.
Well, it'll have to be, yeah, I can report on what it might entail. I don't know if we can get it to you by the next meeting.
Yeah, well, I'm not asking that it should be, but so we're trying to keep abreast of it.
Okay, the other old business, of course, is the Administrative Procedure Act, and we didn't take any action on that the last time. We're now aware that we have no additional funding to hire a person to do the kind of review that we wanted, and we know that the Legislative Council, at least the present Legislative Council, thought that we should use the services of the Legal Division to accomplish that task.
Obviously, nothing can be done about it.
So. That's right.
I think we should leave until a meeting after there's a new legislative council.
Okay.
Is there a possibility, or I guess my question would be directed to Dick, is the 9 o'clock time for our November 17 meeting a good time, or can it be later and you can make a later flight?
I'm not sure when the next flight, I think the next one isn't until like 11 something, so no.
So what one did you have to catch?
10 minutes to 7.
He's been well into the afternoon.
I'm being punished for missing the last few meetings. I understand that.
Come down and party on Friday night.
Well,
the punishment is indeed bitter because during our phone conversation, he apprised me that he would be here at 9:30 to accommodate his taking a later flight.
If only to discover that
there was no later flight.
Monday through Friday, yes, but not on weekends.
I see.
Goodness. Okay.
We have three copies of the meeting materials here for the three commissioners who were not able to be here, and so we should give those to Terry.
Well, how much do you have to carry, Terry?
I could probably put them in there and carry them back.
Well, you know, we can probably get legislative information to send these.
Pouch.
Yeah.
LAA could send it up. Yeah, that's a good idea.
So that you don't have to carry them back.
Yeah.
They're all, Carolyn and Pat Rohde are here.
Sure. Yeah.
And
so two of them.
Why don't we take, maybe you could take the one for Brent.
That's a good idea.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
better.
Yeah, I'll take custody of the two for Carolyn and Pat.
Okay.
And,
that sounds good.
Okay. Is there any new business come before the commission at this time?
To refresh my failing memory, where did we stand with relation to the Title II?
Title II, we have submitted to the leadership of both the House and the Senate and said we await your beck and call.
We haven't heard
from. We have not heard a word.
And the one that's interested in it is Halford.
Right.
Not really.
And I don't know how interested he is now. I would say that we should wait until we have new House and Senate leadership and write him a follow-up letter and say, you know, last year we submitted a Title II evaluation for you. What's your pleasure? So at this point in time, you know, Sam Cotton and Tim Kelly have had that for some time.
So we can maybe consider it in a... In a January meeting, we won't even know who the leadership will be.
That's right.
Probably a February meeting. Revive it.
Yeah. I've also had two inquiries, one from Millard Ingram concerning the Uniform Limited Partnership Act and consideration of that by the Code Revision Commission, and from Art Peterson, who, as you know, retired here in October. I don't know if he's retired from the Uniform Commissioners, but he's retired as an Assistant Attorney General. So,
but you had an inquiry from him on what?
He was proposing that the Code Revision Commission look into review and recommendation of adoption of the Uniform Limited Partnership Act, which Dan advises is one of the...
Well, why don't we put that on the meeting, on the agenda of the meeting for the 17th of November, which is otherwise not that full, and find out if Millard
He lives here now, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lord Ingram.
Yes.
Let him know and ask him to attend that meeting, and we can consider taking it up as a project with his indication of the merits of the proposal.
I would even expand that somewhat and say that we might want to think of that in terms of what, if anything, the Commission wants to do with the General Partnership Act, so if we decide to do something on that, we can look at both of them at the same time.
But it's an agenda item for the 17th of November.
Right. Anything further to come before the Commission? We stand adjourned until November 17th in Anchorage.
Put a note with the operator to call the Condon residents at 8 o'clock.
Right.
My apologies.
7:30 in the morning.
Yes, I've just been flying late into the night too many nights this week. My wife got up and left me alone.
Right.
Must have been a hell of a party last night.
I was home early last night. It was the two nights before that.